Well, it's good to be back with my friends in Fullerton. I think this is about the sixth or eighth time that I have spoken to the congregation. I think there are more people here. So one of two things is happening. Either it's so warm outside that you're coming here to get cool, or you just miss each other so much during the week you have to show up and say hello. I think it's especially appropriate since I am a spiritual descendant of John Calvin. And John Calvin, you may recall, was involved in putting Michael Servetus to death in Geneva several hundred years ago. So it must show that bygones are bygones. And I was looking through your hymnal, and in the hymnal, number 26 is a version of a hymn that we have in Trinitarian churches. Holy, 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 Lord God Almighty. The last verse, I think, is blessed God, something about the Trinity anyway. But you have kind of homogenized the words a little bit, taken out some of that. But the tune you didn't touch, and the tune is called Nicaea. So I just find that supremely ironic. Now, as it turns out, August 25th was the anniversary of the conclusion of the Council of Nicaea in 325. And out of that council came a bunch of things that probably didn't have much to do with Jesus. They had all kinds of rules and regulations on how to deal with heresy. And, of course, my ancestors, Cotton and Increase Mather, didn't have a fond appreciation for Unitarians. They didn't exactly burn them, as Calvin did, but they did sort of drive them out of town. And so how wonderful that we've come all these years to the place now where a Calvinist, unrepentant Calvinist, is speaking to you. Also, on the next day after the 25th, August 26th, was the 19th Amendment. It was approved by all the states on August 26th, 1920. So, ladies, you are to be congratulated. Of course, you did manage to elect the first president after you got the right, Warren Gamaliel Harding, who was a good-looking guy, but unfortunately also a philanderer. However, you know that some things never change. Now, today I want to look. Now, I know you had to have some help from the men. The topic today, as Thomas read it, is where we are as Americans. And we have gone through a rocky climb, sometimes going up and sometimes going down. I think after World War II, we had a sense that we were giants, like in Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift. We were giants. But then just wait a while and we become small. I think after the assassination of John F. Kennedy, we have never recovered our bearings. All that optimism, all that hope, we're still floundering. And the topic today, are we rising or falling, really comes from the experience of Benjamin Franklin. How many of you have been to Philadelphia and seen Independence Hall? I'm trying to remember, maybe you can help me, whether in the hall they have some of the original furniture. And Franklin recalls looking at the presiding officer's chair where George Washington sat, and I think the chair is still there. On the back of the chair, it has nice carvings, and there is a sun, half a sun to be more specific. And Franklin would look at that when Washington wasn't sitting in the chair as they deliberated and came across finally with the Constitution that we have. Well, we've changed it a little bit. But anyway, the Constitution that was written, and Franklin finally agonized over whether the sun was rising or setting. During the early part of the deliberations, he was thinking it was setting. This was it. The heady days of the Independence War were over, and he could see the whole experiment just going down the drain. But finally, by the end of the convention, Franklin was sure that the sun was rising. So today, to have a little fun, once in a while I'm going to throw out a refrain that I want you to respond. Is the sun rising or setting? And if you think whatever I have just mentioned is an indication the sun is rising, you're to shout out, rising! And if on the other hand you think that that is an indication the sun is setting, to answer Franklin's question, then you're to shout out setting. Okay, just makes it a little more interesting, if I can just remember to do it. Now, with the Constitution, you know, we had this sharing of powers and a very odd form of government, which I am now convinced most Americans do not understand. Just look at our electoral history. We can elect a president that gets a mandate to do certain things. And at the same time, we can elect members of Congress who want to go diametrically in the other direction. And we've done that many times. Well, for instance, we elected Barack Obama and a Congress of one particular party to bring about health care reform. And my gosh, they actually did what they said they were going to do. And then all of a sudden, the people of the United States, 2 years later, decided to vote out that Congress and say, no, 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 we didn't mean that. We don't want that. We want to go another direction. It's kind of like changing the course of an aircraft carrier. I've been on the bridge of an aircraft carrier. It's not an easy thing to do. It was a brilliant form of government because it gave the small states some reason to believe they weren't going to get run over by the big states. So with the House of Representatives that had electoral power based on population, big states wanted to have clout, and only the House can begin deliberations on anything to do with money. Did you know that? If it has to do with money, it must begin in the House. But then the small states had the Senate, where every state gets two senators, and they could slow down anything that the rabble came up with. And then, of course, the election of the president. When you go to your ballot in November, you mark one of the two or three or four candidates, however many are on the ballot. I guess there are really about seven or eight, aren't there? And we heard about the consequences of our election. Thomas, that's a brilliant quote. I want to get a copy of that. Wouldn't you blister if you sit on the fire? I got to use that in Coronado. That's wonderful. But when you go into the ballot box or wherever you vote, you're really not voting for that candidate. You're voting for electors that are pledged to that candidate. And they may or may not vote for the candidate. The Founding Fathers were nervous about giving direct power to vote for president to the people. And you know what? I'm starting to think they were wise. Maybe we're just not up to it. It's like a big advertising campaign. And of course, the problem they also had when they came together to form a more perfect union was what to do about slavery. Jefferson, Madison, the rest of them knew they were kicking the can down the road. And they came up with that infamous decision that was pushed by the South because they felt they were going to get overwhelmed by those northern radicals, those Calvinists. Slaves were to be counted. Isn't that marvelous? Slaves are to be counted. They couldn't vote. But they would be counted as three-fifths of a person. Three-fifths of a person. In order to determine the number of representatives to the House of Representatives and electors in the Electoral College. And what's really strange, if it wasn't for that three-fifths of a person business, Thomas Jefferson would not have been elected president. And old John Adams would have gotten his second term. Three-fifths of a person. Well, that finally was undone or reversed after the Civil War. But it is a legacy that we need to remember. Is the sun rising or setting? Ooh, I don't know. I don't put that to a vote. Another Lincoln quote that I like that is important for us is to realize that we are in a journey in which we have to learn what needs to be preserved and what needs to be jettisoned. And we never know what is what. But Lincoln, in the midst of the Civil War, in an annual message to Congress, said, "The dogmas of the quiet